danger, Dr. Banfield.
You know, Rusty, I'd like to know the value of an original Edgar Allan Poe manuscript and what the chances are of one being discovered that hadn't been accounted for previously.
Oh, I don't see how you can... Dan, someone's behind that pile of boxes.
Yes, we gotta... Hey, who turned off those lights?
Dan, the pile of boxes is moving!
Right now, Rusty, they're coming over on us!
Dr. Daniel Banfield, student of crime psychology, has many times provided police with a solution to a baffling case. And at times, too, the alert Dr. Banfield has found that his pet theories on the workings of a criminal mind must be subject to change without notice. There's another interesting case ahead for the doctor today. Let's see how he handles it. Our story opens in an antique shop located in an old part of the city. It is early morning.
Morning, Mr. Exeter.
Hey, who the devil are you? What do you do here?
Why, I'm Maurice, Mr. Exeter. Don't you remember? You hired me 3 months ago.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, you look like a capable fellow, Maurice. By the way, where's that woman?
Miss Novin? Why, she's in your private office, Mr. Exeter. She went looking for Mr. Furbush.
Those two, what are they doing in my private office? I told that old fuddy-duddy Furbush to keep out of there. Furbush, how many times have I... What are you doing there? What are you doing there, I say? Answer me. Speak up, man. Give me those... How dare you? Put down that... Murray! Murray!
Well, if it came from in here, we'll soon find out.
Good gosh. Look, it's Furbush and Exeter. Mr. Exeter. Mr. Exeter.
Maurice? Yes, Miss Newell.
What?
I'm right here.
Oh, good heavens, you scared me.
Is something wrong, Miss Newell?
Oh, no, not a thing. Except that Exeter is fainted and Albert Furbush is dead.
Dead, Miss Newell?
I'll say he's dead. Take a look. That death spindle's sticking right through his heart. Maurice, I think we've got to call a doctor. And maybe the police.
Oh, Angela, will you see?
Of course. Dr. Danfield's office. Oh, yes, Captain Otis. Yes, he's here. It's for you, Dan, Captain Otis.
Oh, thank you.
Now, don't forget that you promised to take me to dinner in the theater tonight.
How could I forget?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Captain Otis. Yes, of course. I see. Accidental death, you say?
Dan, you're not going
to... Be quiet, Rusty. What was that, Captain? Death was instantaneous, huh? I see. Well, yes, of course. Yes, I think it would give me an excellent opportunity to study an unusual type of criminal.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, that's a good idea, Captain. There'd be considerable advantage to it. Tell you what, I'll drop over to your office first, and then you can call the ledger and make the necessary arrangements. Fine. We'll be over in about 20 minutes. Goodbye, Captain. Pick up your notebook, Rusty. We're going down to headquarters.
That's about all I know, Dan. Oh. Furbush was apparently leaning over the desk and fell forward.
Well, it is rather an unusual accident, Captain. I suppose it could have happened that way.
Yeah. Well, there's the spindle that penetrated his heart.
Oh. Ugly looking thing. Fingerprints?
None. We've already checked.
It still looks like an accident to me.
It did to me, too, Rusty, until I heard about the missing manuscript.
Oh, can you give me any additional background on that, Captain?
Only what Miss Novin's, Exeter's secretary, told me. According to her, Exeter has always been a great admirer of Edgar Allan Poe's work. Sort of a crackpot on the subject.
Mild manifestation of mania of that sort is common among normal people, Captain. It doesn't necessarily mean that Exeter is mentally ill.
Well, you can tell more about that when you meet him, Dan. But anyway, he recently came across what he believed to be an original Poe manuscript worth a great deal of money. It disappeared at the same time of the so-called accident.
Captain Otis, you said that Mr. Exeter is a rather absent-minded type of person.
Yes, extremely so.
Oh? Well, isn't it possible that he might have misplaced the manuscript?
Well, that's what his secretary seems to think, but I'm not convinced.
What is the secretary like? Young and beautiful?
Oh, not particularly. She's an ex-newspaper woman.
You know, Captain, I think there's more to this than appears on the surface.
Well, even if there isn't, I can see that you won't be satisfied until you've had a fling off.
All right, Ruffy. So, put on your best charm, Sister Act. And we'll pay Mr. Exeter a visit.
Keep in touch with me, will you, Dan?
Right, Captain. Come on, Ruffy.
In a moment, we return for the second act of Danger, Dr. Danfield, but first... And now back to Michael Dunn for the second act of Danger, Dr. Danfield.
Well, this is the place here, Rusty. That's when you get acquainted with Mr. Exeter.
His face seems to
be.
He must be deaf. He didn't even look up.
Maybe he just doesn't care. Good evening. Are you Mr. Exeter?
Hey. What was that, young man?
I said, are you Mr. Exeter?
Exeter? Yes. Come to think that I am.
Well, aren't you sure?
Sure about what? Now, look here. I'm in no mood for jokes. Where in tarnation is that girl? I asked her to bring me those papers an hour ago.
I'm coming. What's the matter now?
Where are those papers? Where have you been?
You're crazy. I bet you don't even know what tape you're talking about.
Oh, well, perhaps I don't. Now, if you'll introduce me to your friends, I'd like to get back to work.
Well, don't mind him, folks. He just doesn't know the school's out. Well, what's on your mind?
Well, my name is Joe Ruggles, and this is Bessie Murdoch. They're from the Ledger.
Oh, sure. Your boss called an hour ago. Well, there's no point in trying to talk to Exeter. He's already forgotten you're here. Come with me.
Well, shouldn't we say something to Mr. Exeter, then?
I doubt if it'd do any good,
huh? This is the room in here.
I still think that Mr. Exeter is the man we should talk to.
Look, honey, nobody talks to Mr. Exeter and makes sense. Hey, incidentally, my name is Anna Nobins, and I work here.
Oh?
Well, now that that's settled, what's the legend think it's going to gain by sending a couple of feature writers down here?
Possibly nothing. Is this the room in which the accident took place?
Yeah. And don't let your imagination run away with you. It was an accident.
Oh?
Come on over here. That's the desk where the body was found.
Who found the body, Miss Novins?
Mr. Exeter. This is his private office.
If this is his private office, then why...
Look, dearie, if you walked into your private office and found a corpse sitting in your favorite chair, you'd be a little squeamish about working here for a couple of days, wouldn't you?
I guess you're right.
Let's begin at the beginning, shall we, Miss Novins? Tell me, did Mr. Exeter keep his office locked when he wasn't in it?
I'll say he did. This is where he stored his first editions and original manuscripts.
If he kept his office locked, how did Albus Furbish get in?
Easy. He had a key, Jerry. That was Mr. Exeter's assistant. Well, he's been with him for 20 years.
So Furbish got in the office first yesterday morning and came in here to, perhaps to straighten out Mr. Exeter's desk.
Don't act so suspicious, Newtown. That's exactly what happened. He sat down in the chair went out from under him, he fell forward on the spindle, and there you are.
I see. Tell me, how long had he been there when Mr. Exeter arrived?
Now, if I were to say 5 minutes, you'd say, aha! How'd you know it was exactly 5 minutes after Mr. Furbush died? Now, look, why don't you two relax? This was just a simple accidental death. You can't make any more out of it, no matter how much you read.
You know, Eddie, you sound like a detective.
Well, I go to the movies. Most of them give me a pain.
Then why do you go?
That is a fair question.
Hey, you two, let's stick to the subject, shall we? If you don't come back with a story for the front page, my boss will hit the ceiling.
Maybe he'll settle for a notice on the obituary page.
Not likely, Rusty. Etta, what did Mr. Exeter do when he discovered the body?
Well, he let out a bleat loud enough to wake the dead. I was just coming into the shop. I galloped in here and took charge of the situation.
What did you do?
What I do? I took one look and called a doctor.
Well, that was good thinking. Can you describe the exact position in which you found Furbush?
Sure. He was sprawled out in the chair with his mouth open. His eyes were open, too. He was staring at the ceiling like there was something up there that interested him. It wasn't pretty.
Mm. Melvin, how does the missing manuscript of Edgar Allan Poe tie in with all this?
I wondered when that had come up. If you really want to reach for a story, you could say that someone was trying to snitch the manuscript. Al Furbush came in and caught him, and the thief drove the spindle into his heart. Only it'd be a sucker if you wrote it that way.
I take it you don't think that's the way it happened.
Of course it didn't happen that way.
Well, why not?
Because the thief couldn't have gotten out of the building without leaving a door or a window unlocked. And because there weren't any fingerprints on the base of the spindle.
Well, nice going, Evan. You're really quite a kiddo.
Oh, thanks.
The stolen manuscript still makes me think.
The manuscript hasn't been stolen or lost, Jerry. The old man misplaced it. He misplaces everything. Well, Marie, how long have you been standing there?
Only a moment, Miss Melvin. Did I startle you?
Harry, you're always startling me, swinging around the way you do. Hey, what's the hammer and the screwdriver for?
The casters on the chair, Miss Novitz.
Well, what about them? She only put them in 2 days ago.
Mr. Etchiger wants them removed, Miss Novitz. He feels it was because of the casters that the chair slipped and Mr. Furbish fell onto the spindle.
Well, you can do it some other time. We're busy now.
Very well, Miss.
Just a minute, please.
Yes, sir?
You say that you placed the casters in the chair only 2 days ago?
Yes, sir.
Who suggested that you put them there?
Why, I did, sir. I thought it would please Mr. Exeter. His chair is always catching on the rug beneath his desk.
I see. How long have you worked for Mr. Exeter, Maurice?
Only about 3 months, sir.
Still reaching Newtown? Oh, honestly, you must be desperate for a story. His job depends on it.
Is that all, sir?
Yes, thanks, Maurice.
Yes, sir.
Oh, don't look so disappointed, Joe. Why don't you content yourself with just writing about the bunch of queer characters you've met today?
Don't think we couldn't.
Perhaps we'll have to resort to that. Etta, do you mind if Bessie and I browse around here a bit and help finding something the police overlooked?
Oh, help yourself. If you find any hidden clues, let us know. We'll be in the front room.
Hey, Leslie, what do you think?
I think somebody's trying to make a monkey out of it.
So do I. Yeah, let's have a look at the casters, shall we? Yes, it could have happened the way Etta described. Especially if Furbush were unaware that the casters had been inserted.
But you don't think it happened that way.
No, I don't. I think that Albert Furbush was murdered.
I keep wondering about that stolen manuscript.
Stolen manuscript is a motive for murder, all right. Look around here a bit.
But if Etta says is true, there couldn't have been anything.
Oh, couldn't there, Weston? Hey, let's have a look in these desk drawers.
If that character Etta finds us going through these drawers, and really
risk that.
Anything interesting?
No. Only the usual things. Count books, ledgers, and so on. This is a coincidence.
What is it?
A brochure from the Metropolitan Museum.
Well, is that so unusual?
Well, not in itself, it isn't. This one happens to mention specifically an original Edgar Allan Poe manuscript that's on exhibition there.
I don't get the connection.
No, neither do I. Yes. But it might... Come on, let's see what else we can find. What's behind this door?
Looks like a storeroom. Do you suppose those piled up boxes over there are full of antiques?
Sounds solid. Could contain almost anything.
Damn, look out. That whole pile wobbled when you touched it.
Never mind that. I got a hunch about the manuscript at the museum. I wonder... Yes, by George, I think I'll do it.
Do what?
Visit the Metropolitan Museum.
What good will that do?
Rusty, I'd like to know the value of an original Poe manuscript and what the chances are of one being discovered that hadn't been accounted for.
Oh, I don't see how you can tell. Dan, someone's behind those boxes.
Yes, we better... Hey, who turned off those lights?
Dan, the pile of boxes is moving.
Look out, Rusty. Come on. In a moment, we return for the third act of Danger, Dr. Banfield. First. And
Now back to Michael Dunn for the third act of
Danger, Dr. Danfield.
Dan.
Yes, Rusty?
Hurry up. There's only two matches left.
Don't be impatient. I'll have it in a minute. Picking locks is a little out of my line. Especially when I have only a penknife and a hairpin with which to work.
Oh, I can't spread my skin, Dan.
Light another match, will you?
All right, I'm not. Dan, do you really think someone pushed those boxes over?
Of course I do. And that same someone locked us in this closet. Well, there we are. Now, put out the match. Come on.
I'm right behind you, but I...
All right, you two, come out with your hands up.
It's Etta, and she has a gun.
Yeah, Etta with a gun, and she knows how to handle it, too. Oh.
Hey, Marie.
I'm right here, Miss Novin. Shall I make the call?
Oh, do that, Marie. All right, you two, get over there by the wall. Go ahead, Marie.
Just a minute, Etta. Who are you going to call?
Get back, Marie. Who are you going to call, he says. Say, who do you think you were kidding with that newspaper reporter act? Oh, you know?
Just what makes you think we're not reporters, Etta?
Very simple. I called the personnel office at the Ledger. They never heard of Joe Ruggles and Bessie Murdoch.
Lester, remind me to tell Ketch and others to be more thorough the next time he establishes our background.
But how did she get suspicious in the first place? That's even more simple. You two were talking about the front page and the obituary page.
So?
Newspaper people don't use those terms. They say page one, an obit page.
You are quite a detective at that, Etta.
I used to work for a newspaper. I know. Go ahead, Maurice. Make the call.
Yes, Miss Nova.
Yes, sure.
Nothing doing. Keep your hands away from your pocket, big boy.
Sit down, Rusty. I've got to run.
Look out, Dan.
Sorry, Maurice. Come on, Rusty. Let's get out of here.
Etta, still have your car. Not my way off.
Are you okay, Rusty?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, come on, let's get going.
What do you make of it, Dan?
I don't know yet just what to make of it, but I do know one thing.
What?
Etta didn't fire that shot. It came from the other side of the room.
Who do you suppose did?
That's what I'm going to find out, Rusty. But first, I think we'll pay a visit to the museum.
I wish I knew what you had in your mind.
Well, I'm not quite sure myself, but I have a hunch that the entire answer to this riddle hinges on the Pearl manuscript.
But the one here in the museum has nothing to do with Exeter's manuscript.
That's not, and I still have to have a look at it. Let's see. Yeah, it's got one of those glass cases. You look at these, and I'll look at the ones on the other side.
Dan?
Yes?
Edgar Allan Poe didn't write Cabbages and Canes, did he?
If old Henry could hear you, he'd turn over in his grave. But you come over here, and I'll show you something that Poe did write.
Oh, you found it?
Yeah, it's right there. The second manuscript from the left.
Looks to me as if it were written underwater.
It's pretty old. Still legible, though. Rusty.
What is it?
I think I've got something. Take a good look at that manuscript once more.
I can't make anything out of it. It looks just like the notes you give me to type up.
Hold on to those notes. Someday you might be able to sell them to a museum for a lot of money.
I'd settle right now for a ticket to the Rose Bowl game. What do you see there that's so interesting?
Yeah, I'll tell you later, but right now we're going to make a call to Captain Otis, and then we're going back to Mr. Exeter's shop for a final check. Yeah, keep back in the shadows, Rusty. Just assume our friend across the street didn't see us.
I wish Captain Otis would be here. This neighborhood gives me the creeps.
He should be here by now. And is anybody moving around inside the shop?
Not a soul.
Oh, someone's coming now. Probably Otis. Oh, Captain Otis?
Oh, there you are, Dan.
Yeah.
Hello, Rusty.
Welcome to the party, Captain.
I'm sorry I couldn't get here earlier, but I didn't get your message until I got back to headquarters. What's up, Dan?
Well, I can't tell you the whole story now, Captain. However, your hunch about Albert Furbush's death being murder was correct. I don't think that even Rusty believes it was an accident now.
Say, how much convincing do you think I need after being smothered under a ton of wooden boxes and dodging bullets all afternoon?
Dodging bullets?
Yeah, we'll tell you about it later, Captain. Right now, I want to get one more look at those office ledgers and accounts in Exeter's shop.
Okay, let's go.
I don't know what kind of a reception we'll get, but I do know there's at least one person who won't be overjoyed to see us again. So, watch your step, huh?
I can't see anyone inside. If there's a small nightlight burning.
Yeah, I'll try the door. Well, that's strange. The door's unlocked.
No sign of anyone around.
You lead the way, Dan. You know what you're looking for.
Yes, Exeter's office over here.
Have you a flashlight, Captain?
Right here. Well, throw the beam over here on the desk, will you?
Okay.
Well, that's good.
The account books were in that second drawer.
Yes, I know. Oh, hold the light down here, Captain. Huh?
Right.
Well, that proves it. Hey, the lights are on.
That proves what, Dr. Danfield?
It's Exeter!
Yes, and he handles that gun rather expertly, doesn't he?
And I can shoot it even more expertly, Captain Otis.
I see you've been expecting us, Exeter.
You don't think the front door was left unlocked just by mistake, do you?
No, no. As a matter of fact, it didn't surprise me at all.
Did you think I was unaware that you were not newspaper reporters when you visited me previously?
Frankly, Exeter, I didn't care what you thought. I discovered it was you who murdered Albert Furbush.
Oh, so you know about that. Clever of you, Danfield. Tell me, just how were you so sure?
Quite simple. Etta explained that you came in and found Furbush sitting in the desk chair with a spindle buried in his heart.
And so?
Etta also said that Furbush was leaning back in the chair with his sightless eyes staring at the ceiling.
Well?
Well, the police medical examiner stated that Furbush had died instantly. Since the accidental death theory was that he'd fallen forward on the spindle, he would hardly have been able to sit back in the chair and stare at the ceiling if he died instantly.
Yeah, nice going, Dan.
Yes, nice going. And just who do you think will believe such a story when I had no motive?
Oh, you did have a motive.
Did I?
Yes. It was the original Poe manuscript. In the first place, the chances are 1,000 to 1 that no original Poes exist which haven't been accounted for.
Which makes mine, of course, all the more valuable.
But you haven't won, Exeter. The one you claim as original Poe was expertly forged by yourself.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, no, it isn't. All your life, you've wanted a desire to own an original manuscript by as famous a writer as Edgar Allan Poe. The prestige of possessing such a manuscript would gratify your frustrated ego.
That's utter complete nonsense.
Oh, is it? When Albert Furbush discovered it was a forgery, he tried to blackmail you. You flew into a rage and plunged the spindle into his heart.
That's a lie. It wasn't a forgery. You can't prove it.
I think I can. Apparently, you've been practicing Poe's handwriting for years. It's only recently that you achieved any degree of success.
You fool. You've no evidence.
Oh, the evidence, Exeter, is back there on your own desk. All of your personal papers and accounts are in the handwriting of Edgar Allan Poe.
Take it easy, Exeter. Get him, Murray.
No, you'll never take me alive. Never.
Keep away, it's all right for me.
I got Rusty. Come on, Sam.
Too bad, Exeter.
In a moment, we'll return for the conclusion of Danger, Dr. Danfield, but first... Now back to Michael Dunn for the conclusion of Danger, Dr. Danfield.
Come on in, Captain. Let's see.
Yeah.
There's some coffee and pull things over, shall we?
Unless you sure stand for that for that episode.
Oh, come now, Captain. You must be getting used to these incidents by now.
Rusty, I'll never get used to having people use my poor old battered form for target practice.
Sheldon and I wholeheartedly endorse, Captain. Oh, Rusty, get the coffee now at the fire.
Make yourself at home, Captain. I'll be right back.
Thanks. There we are. Draw up a chair, Captain.
By the way, don't you think our friend Etta would make an interesting psychological study?
I don't know about that, Dan, but I do know that it was fortunate that she and Maurice decided they'd been playing on the wrong team.
What I'd like to know is, what made you get suspicious of Edward Exeter in the first place? Here you are, Captain.
Thank you.
It was merely a matter of knowing people, Rusty. Exeter pretended to be absent-minded, yet according to Etta, he never failed to lock his office, and his papers and possessions were in perfect order. He was inconsistent.
Hardly enough in itself to do more than arouse your suspicions, Dan.
True, Captain. But when I realized the amazing similarity between the writing on the manuscript at the museum and then on Exeter's papers, the answer became apparent.
Dan...
One minute, Rusty. It was a sense of acute frustration that induced the act of violence, Captain, when Exeter's otherwise harmless little Ruth was discovered by Furbush.
Mm-hmm. Does frustration always induce an act of violence, Dan?
Just what do you mean by that, my charming little redhead?
It's 9 o'clock, and you still haven't taken me to dinner. And I think I'm about to become violent.
But Rusty, our guest...
Oh, don't mind me, folks. I've got to get back to headquarters. You go ahead and have a good time. You earned it.
Now, Rusty, you know, for being so rude to our guests, I have a good mind to have you transcribe the notes on this case right now.
Oh, no, Dan, you wouldn't.
Oh, you couldn't be that tough, Dan.
Oh, no? You have your notebook handy, Rusty?
Well,
take this down. I'll make it brief.
Oh.
In attempting to analyze the mental processes of the psychopathic killer, it would be well for the student of psychology to bear in mind that some criminal cases, a poor motive is better than no motive at all.
Oh, no.